If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Folks,
let's do it.
It's time for episode 14.88, part D of The Daily Show, brought to you by therightstuff.biz.
This is The Daily Show.
I am Seventh Son. I'm joined by the death panel, a short death panel this week. It's just Mike Enoch, myself, and Ghoul. And we have a special TRS Londonistan correspondent, Marquise Graham. Say hello.
How you doing, guys?
And he's going to tell us if, what I've been led to believe about England these days is basically kind of like if you picture Cairo in one of the Indiana Jones movies, but a little bit muddier. And that's what I've been led to believe.
So, yeah, I mean,
is that what you're getting over there?
Would you rather discuss London or the UK in general?
It's all the same place to me. I'm just a stupid American, so.
Yeah, we could.
Okay.
Isn't it all the
same thing?
It's all the same.
So what, do you want to start on London?
Never mind. I
was there for the last 3 months, so I'll be going back down pretty soon. Yeah, London, I would describe it as, I mean, it's a very open question. Like, there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of change right now. It's very feudal and it's very divided, but you have this ostensible narrative that everyone must stick to, that, you know, everyone's the same, everyone's a citizen, but really you don't have to go that much further below the surface to find out what's really going on. And it's not very pretty. It's not very pretty.
It doesn't seem
pretty. And there's lots to it.
Sorry, my impression is that, I've looked up some stats online, and that while overall Britain is actually theoretically in a better demographic position than the United States, with I think about 87% of England, or actually the United Kingdom altogether, about 87% of the United Kingdom being native Britons and 13% being immigrants. Whereas in the U.S., you know, we have, 65% of the population would be what we call over here non-Hispanic white, meaning, you know, either original colonial stock or white European immigrant stock. And then the rest would be blacks, Hispanics, and whatever other mix of whatever. But you guys have actually a significant still. I mean, I think about us having 87% white and I'm like, holy shit, that would be so awesome. And so you guys still have that. But from what I understand, London is actually...
Yeah, London's very different. It's it's very much a non-native. It's very easy to sort of sneak your way into the economy in London. There's a lot of cash businesses going on. There's a lot of money laundering, crime, a lot of white-collar crime. And in, say in Hammersmith, for example, where I stayed when I first moved down, I mean, you literally can walk down the high street and not see a white face. Most of the businesses are laundering money, as far as I'm aware. Like, they're super cheap, high turnover businesses. And it's, say on High Street Kensington, there's three Persian-owned watermelon shops all next to each other. and you're telling me they can afford commercial rent, commercial business rates, and stay in business? Like, of course they're layering money into their businesses, and it all goes on. And, you know, anyone who's smart enough knows it's going on. And then of course they're paying off the tax inspectors, the police, and you know, the whole thing just revolves around laundering dirty money.
I've got a question on that, which is that maybe there's context here that you know that we don't, because we're not there. So, like, what's the significance of all these businesses laundering money? Like, why? Like, if you were talking to someone else from the UK and you're like, yeah, that guy, you know, like these Muslims laundering money out of this business, like, they would know what you meant, right? Like, we don't have that context. So, just if you could,
why it matters,
what are they doing?
It's kind of like just an unspoken acceptance. Like, you know, London is a very specific thing all in of itself. And in London, money rules everything. And however the money comes in, no one really cares. No one asks too many questions. So in that regard, you get a lot of foreigners coming in, and you know, they want to turn their foreign currency into fashionable watches, or, you know, go shop at Harrods, or turn it into hard currency. So not only do you get the sort of merchant high level City of London money laundering going on, where they're doing it for drug cartels from Mexico and laundering the money for the Afghan drug lords and what have you, but that happens on all levels, right down to your illegal immigrant taxi driver trying to send money back home to Sudan or whatever. You know, that's kind of how London operates.
Yeah, because I had read things about the sort of money laundering situation, and I didn't quite understand why it was significant, but I got the impression that it was something that a lot of the new immigrant business owners were doing, like the shops were, and some of it was sort of implying, I mean, the stuff I was reading at least was implying that money was going back to fight the war in Syria for ISIS or, you know, against the Baghdad government or the United States and things like that.
It goes all over. And like one, I remember I read one article quite recently that said, you know, if you are going to run a bar or any sort of cash business, a corner shop or anything like that in London, legitimately, it's almost impossible to do so because you're competing, all your competition is laundering money. So you have this sort of self-selecting economic incentive that comes in whereby you cannot do business unless that's what you're doing.
Oh, but you should just compete harder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you can't compete with them, man.
Yeah, this sounds familiar somehow. I don't know where I would have heard about such a thing, but
so like in terms of like the demographics, though, actually, I had one question that I wanted to ask. And I remember that we did a show a while ago when James Foley got his head chopped off. Ugh. And that ISIS guy that had done it was supposedly the son. He was British, raised in London. Not British. I hate to say British. He wasn't fucking British. All right. He was some kebab, right? So he's some kebab that was born and raised in London. His father was an Egyptian who got kicked out of Egypt because, you know, he thought he was a terrorist. The United States was watching him. You know, England was watching him. You know, both of our intelligence services are watching him, the Egypt Intelligence Service, whatever. But he's in England. He's in London. He's got kids. And he's living in a council estate, like $1 million council estate, getting welfare from the government. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, can you maybe – how the fuck does that happen? sorry.
I know exactly what you're saying. I think it's a mixture of a number of incentives. First of all, the British government in and of itself is very weak in terms of what it can and cannot do with regards to human rights. You know, most of the laws are made in Brussels now. So even if the UK government did want to kick them out, they probably couldn't. You know, it's actually easier to just put them away on a council estate and try and forget about them. The sort of social justice warriors like the idea that these people can be reformed. You know, if we just show them that we're good people and give them benefits, then, you know, they'll give up everything they've believed.
That is a really good track record.
Yeah,
I know, right? And I think there, I don't know, I know you guys aren't too keen on this narrative, but I definitely think there is an incentive from the sort of security services to have jobs for themselves as well. And, you know, and it ends up becoming a self-perpetuating thing where the press have stories to write about and the security services have jobs to do if these people are here. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen The Cube, the movie The Cube, where it's like they ask who built The Cube. And it's just like, oh, it just kind of built itself. You know, it ends up being something like this, where it's sort of like a self-perpetuating
thing. I'm not adverse to that narrative at all. I mean, that's how quite often I've explained a lot of U.S. foreign policy. I mean, my my desire to see the U.S. government, if it, you know, like if the United States government.
I'm just curious really quick. Is there some reason why you think we wouldn't have?
We wouldn't buy into that narrative? Yeah. I think maybe
I think I've run into discussions with TRS-minded people in the past before that. But I know there's quite a diverse mix of views. I'm not sure actually myself what is exactly TRS, but I think
it's a lot of different. Nobody really knows, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's key, because, I mean, I definitely think that that's part of – I don't think – I mean, a lot of anarchists, when you're an anarchist, you think, oh, that explains everything. There is no terrorism. There's no war to fight. There's no enemy.
Our government is the terrorist.
It's just our government making it all up, and they do it, so they've got – I mean, I get it, but no, I don't – you know, that's really simplistic. Like, obviously, bureaucracies develop an interest in their own what's the quote? Like, they develop an interest in the chaos they create or whatever it is. I forget who said that. It's famous. But yeah, like, obviously, any bureaucracy that is – their job is to solve a problem, they become entrenched, and now their existence depends on the existence of that problem. And that's a consistent issue with any sort of – that's why, you know, in my opinion, the job of the government should not be to solve problems but to maintain order. But anyway.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, I think it was to do with that, like, because, yeah, you're right. Like, anarchist types can be quite simplistic in their reasoning. Definitely.
Well, yeah, they can't.
So anyway,
every anarcho-blank philosophy is just how to look at things when you look at them 2 feet in front of your face. And
that's it, so. So what I wanted to ask was, so you have all these illegal immigrants, and it's, would you say that it is this is more economic interests than, say, a daily push to engulf London in Sharia law? Or is that, I mean, should I believe those kind of claims? I mean,
there are definitely people who think like that. I mean, one of my best friends from childhood, I lost him to, like, fundamentalist Islam, actually.
Oh, really?
And now, you know, he pretty much wants to, like, have a worldwide caliphate. And once I heard him say that, you know, I kind of cut all ties with him. So there are people like that around, but I question how much influence they actually yield. The main reason people come to the UK is undoubtedly, for me, economic. Like, I don't... and. It, you know, if they couldn't make money here, I don't think they would really come here to begin with. So, but once now they are here, then, and they are entrenched, and they do have jobs and families and stable lives, then the secondary aim is to sort of probably fulfill their religious aims, which would be to...
So it's probably like when, you know, we have a lot of Mexicans here, but the Reconquista isn't exactly like a daily threat we're all worried about. So it could be a similar sort of context there.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very similar context. It's much, much more of a gradual... it's still a war. I'd still describe it as a war because our ideological differences are too much to reconcile.
But it's a lot more slow motion war than it is. Because I'm just saying, because I, you know, I see links from some of the, I don't know if we want to call them tabloids over there, where, you know, sometimes they portray Islam in London as like about to just pop any day. So it just seems like that may not be totally accurate, but although we shouldn't downplay the altogether.
I mean, when we see some of the you know, the more extreme cases, like beheadings that, you know, that happen in the streets, and it just, it's like, holy shit, like what the fuck is going on over there?
Yeah.
You know? Like, how, and sort of like, how are they putting up with it?
You really hear the very worst of it. I mean, it's like if Britain was bombarded with everything that went on in Detroit every day, we would think like the U.S. is in a post-apocalyptic,
well, Detroit sort of is
Mad Max world. Yeah. But
if we got those reports, we would think that's like actually a conspiracy of silence to keep that shit from even the American public.
I'm sure there is. I can't believe they still play football in Detroit. It's like,
I can't believe they have functioning institutions at all.
It's shocking. So,
there's an empty tin can for the football.
The empty tin can is the state, but it's full of people. I don't know. It's not worth going.
But the
into.
One thing is sort of about what you were saying about how they go there for jobs and economic purposes, and then maybe secondary things come in later. One of the issues is, and it's an issue here, I think it's an issue in France, an issue in Belgium. I think Belgium has the highest Muslim rate of any European country, and certainly Sweden is feeling it. I mean, you could go on and on. Mm. The issue is you bring them in, and yeah, the initial ones, it's sort of like, yeah, you know, they're not really sort of keeping to their own areas that are sort of self-segregated for them. They have their own religion, their own culture, their own little area that, you know, they're not really mixing with the general population. And it's very easy to be like, oh, you know, those are the benevolent guys. They run the kebab shop, literally, you know, and that's fine. And it's all good. And it doesn't matter. And then the second generation comes around, and the second generation is now growing up in the country, but sort of between two cultures, they feel alienated. And that's the ones, from my understanding, those are the ones that are embracing sort of like the jihadi ideology. Whereas over here, it's the Mexicans and they embrace like gangs and things like that. Like they don't actually assimilate into the mainstream culture. They don't become, you know, they become sort of part of this urban or even, you know, rural or Southwest sort of, you know, lumpen proletariat culture. Blame whitey for everything, don't assimilate, and then get involved in crime and things like that. And from my understanding, that's a problem in France, and I gather it's a problem in England, but I'm not sure.
I mean, I could definitely speak to that. I mean, right now I'm in my hometown of Scotland, which is known as the oil capital of Europe. And actually here we have quite a cosmopolitan populace as well. I mean, much more so than you would think in some sort of random northern Scottish town. But because of the oil industry, you do get a lot of skilled overseas workers coming here. And, you know, there's quite a large African and Middle Eastern contingent, again, because that's where the oil is. And, you know, there's good engineers and skilled labor that comes from there that comes here. And one thing I've noticed about that sort of, and if you were to have a more idealized immigration policy based upon skills and not mass immigration, but more selective. I mean, it has worked quite well here. I've got to say that because there isn't enough of them for them to form their own tight-knit communities. I like to describe immigration as a sort of a solubility factor. Like, so long as immigrants don't nucleate in their own communities and form a shell, they can integrate. And, you know, I mean, my friend is Iranian and he runs like probably the best software engineering company in town, I would say. I mean, not just because he's my friend. It does work well because the people integrate and they're intelligent. Okay. But the problem is when you go to parts of England, maybe Glasgow as well, especially the Muslim communities are particularly bad for this, but also Afro-Caribbean. Say where my mother grew up, which is in a town in Yorkshire, it's all Asian now. It's literally, it's all mosques, all the old department stores and coffee shops. And, you know, it used to be quite a nice gentrified small town. None of that is there anymore. It's like kebab shops, takeaways and mosques. And cheap stores, you know, and then the whole culture of the place has just been degraded and eviscerated and taken back maybe 100 years.
You mean it's been made vibrant and more?
Yeah.
It's been completely enriched.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Enriched.
See, but the problem is the liberals, they'll pick and choose. They'll come to where I live and say, look, this is where the narrative works, but they'll then ignore everywhere where it's not working. I mean, I was just reading a blog online about a place in New Mexico called Taos, it's sort of like a tourist destination. There's lots of Mexicans there and it's seen as a sort of a bastion of multiculturalism, and all the SJWs will point to Taos as a place where multiculturalism works, but they won't point to Baltimore. They won't point to Detroit. They won't point to
anywhere in Southern California, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, they won't point to South Texas. They won't point to Southern California. They won't point to Arizona.
It's just
Phoenix.
It's just weird that liberal whites are fine with either ignoring or knowing that it's there and thinking that it's okay that there's parts of their own country where they can't go, either where it's dangerous or where there's no one for them to talk to. It just blows my mind, and that you know we're looked upon as some kind of bigoted assholes for just not wanting that kind of shit to exist. You know, it's like, I don't wish, just to get into like a little tangent, I don't wish ill on like people from other cultures or, you know, we have a lot of racist rhetoric on the blog and stuff, and, you know, that's something that I'm responsible for. And it's not that I don't literally have a problem with, I have a problem with them being like in my way. It's like, go do your thing where you come from. Don't bring it here and replace what's grown up around me, what belongs. You know, just wanted to go there for a second.
It doesn't blow my mind that it's happening or anything. It's like there's a whole elaborate web of self-hate and a bunch of other garbage that just perpetuates the mindset.
Is it self-hate or is it just signaling?
That not only it's good, but it should be accelerated as fast as possible. And
is it self-hate when signaling that you're for that stuff makes you holier than thou than the guy next to you who then has to one-up you on that? I mean, is that...
Yeah. I mean...
I'm not convinced it's self-hate.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
I do think that maybe self-hate's the wrong word. I should say
a macro level. It's not necessarily for your own self, but maybe for your own culture. And also the signaling aspect of it where you can't then ever admit that it was wrong. So the Marquis was saying, so like we got a town, so you got some high intellect Iranians coming in. They're probably actually not committed to Islam. They're probably fairly secular. They want to be software engineers. They want to make money. They want to engage in business, and they do fine. And then you get, the lower segments of society coming in and taking over entire towns that become like Muslim ghettos, right? I mean, I can totally picture that in my mind. And to see, and of course the SJW will always lean towards the one and not the other. And you can't, in their zeal to not be racist, in their zeal to be the correct opinions, the correct viewpoint, to be the ones that are sort of leading the way, leading the charge for this new multicultural Britain or multicultural Europe, multicultural United States, whatever. Like, you can't ever back off from it and be like, wait, whoa, this isn't good. Like, this isn't healthy. It's not healthy. And I mean, not to sound like some bleeding heart faggot, but it's not healthy for them either. It's not good for anybody.
This is what I was saying, though, is that you can't – is that it is an elaborate web. You can call it self-hate. You can call it guilt. You can call it brainwashing, whatever the hell you want to call it. But it starts – I mean, I'm assuming it's the same way in Europe, but I don't have any firsthand experience. But I know going to school, and then every other American listener probably that has gone to public school since as far back as I can remember. I remember, when you're taught history, you're taught fuck whitey, basically. When you're taught, as you get older, you start talking about history of economics and, capitalism's evil and the workers are fighting, blah, 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 blah. I mean, with that, I'll just skip a whole bunch of shit, not go on a huge tangent, but basically in every class that you're ever in, that's not a complete analytic class, that's impossible to put a spin on, like mathematics or something. There's typically some dildo spin on it, that's the only thing people conceive. And so it's really comfortable to be an SJW. And when you're really zealous about your SJW narrative, then it's like this weird position where you're being incredibly lazy and being very self-righteous about your laziness. It's really it's really comforting to take these positions and believe that they're working. That would be the most comfortable worldview ever, and life would be so simple if that was true. And I really wish it was. Unfortunately, it's not, and they're pieces of shit.
Yeah, and I remember when you sort of growing up and first getting politicized and stuff. And I ran into being from a fairly affluent suburb, when you first get politicized, sort of late teen years, there's all these anarcho fucking communists running around, right? Like, that's sort of the default position to take when you first become political, when you're sort of an affluent suburbanite. And I always used to, I sort of was in there for a little while, but it was so stupid I couldn't really maintain any kind of cohesion with that. So I was out of that pretty soon.
I can confirm that for sure.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw a bunch of personal information about me out there, but I'm a musician and go to plenty of shows, play plenty of shows, etc. And in the music scenes, it's full of just Brahmins everywhere, and I can definitely confirm that Brahmins that start to go politically minded are all fucking anarcho-communists easily.
And the funny thing for that, for me, is that in their own minds, they're very, and they're the ones that sort of carry this sort of heavily blue-pilled so-called narrative of whitey is bad, the darky is always good, whitey is always bad, we need to make up for the crimes. If they come over here and don't fit in, it's our fault. etc. I mean, that's they carry that narrative to a T. And the funny thing to me is always sort of like they are pretending to be so against society when in fact these are the fucking kids that would volunteer in third grade. These are the kids that volunteer to be hall monitor to rat on the other kids. You know what I mean? like it's the exact like they, it's the exact they are the enforcers. They're the enforcers of the of like really the elite point of view. And I mean, it's said a million times, but it's a point of view that the elite don't have to deal with and everybody else does.
Cool.
In that way, it's a very powerful social signaler. Because the more you preach an SJW view, the more you're inherently signaling that you don't have to deal with the consequences of that. And therefore, the higher up the social tree you are.
Wow, that's interesting.
So since we've got the Marquis up so late, can we steer the conversation back towards the UK in particular?
Well, I guess, I mean, we talked about Rotherham, right? And that was sort of a big deal for us. And I just would, what's the sort of, how was that reverberated through public consciousness in Britain? And what are the fallout, if any, what's going on with that?
It's very interesting, actually. I think it has been a sort of a splash of cold water to the face, to be honest. Where before you couldn't say certain things, I think now a more TRS view is probably more within the political mainstream now, I would say.
So like, that story had traction. That didn't just die with the report coming out. That has reverberated at all. Because I'm just asking because here, if you're just a normal fag, you don't even know about it. Like, we know about it, but I know plenty of people who should know about it who don't.
Well, the thing is, you have to remember what stops right-wing views coming out is people being afraid to say them.
Right.
And now you have a sort of a silent, if not majority, a silent, sizable proportion of the population who are scared to say what they think. Now they can come out and say what they think. And anyone who says, oh, you shouldn't say that, they can say, well, think of the 1,400 children who were sexually molested. And that is a very, very powerful message. And that can't go away. They can't sweep it under the carpet. And it's not going anywhere. And it's not sort of reverberated like a bell. It's not been a sharp shock, but it's more like poison. It's going to eat away at the SJW narrative over time. Yeah.
What I think is really particularly funny about that is that most of the time in I think America, when we have the left that really does something pretty shitty, it usually is something that, because of the narrative, what's considered the greatest evil, what's considered the passable evil, typically shit can be swept under the rug, like Benghazi can be sort of swept under, like, yeah, that sucks, but you know how it goes.
Yeah.
But I mean, with something like this, it would be the... my heart goes out to the fucking children. I think it's really awful, but I would say, I think I can pretty much confirm that when it comes to like media outlets that are relevant, it definitely has. You have a lot of people that don't want to drop it, and media basically treats it like, oh, look at these idiots, they still won't drop it.
Yeah, you're if you bring up like the birther stuff or that, you're just like an asshole who doesn't like Obama because he's black.
But the point I was getting to though is there's no way with these, you know, was it 1,500 sex
of that order
slaves? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what are you going to tell someone who points to that? What are you going to say to him? Like, get over it.
Well, I was
like, if you're an SJW, that's not going to work. It's going to make it better for the right.
Well, if you look at our press here, I mean, this is the thing I was kind of worried about with the Rotherham thing over there. It's, I don't know how your press is, but our press, when it comes to celebrity, if you take, for instance, the Lena Dunham thing that came out, when you talk about who else was there, Polanski and Woody Allen, all these people that have these like pedophilia accusations and things in their past. I mean, our media has a way of circling the wagons and actually trying to normalize that behavior so that these people don't look bad.
And well, those people also have something else in common.
Oh no!
Shut it down! Shut it down!
But you know, I was a little depressed because I figured, let's see, who was I watching? There's a YouTuber from over there, Millennial Woes. And when this happened, he was all, you know, with his fancy accent, you know, anyone who's not talking about race after the, you know, and he was pretty perturbed by it. And he seemed like pretty, like, I don't know, that guy is kind of suicidal as it is, but he seemed like even more suicidal than usual talking about that and talking about, his fellow UK YouTuber alt-right sphere kind of guys that was, you know, wondering why they were still hammering on like feminism and other shit when they should be talking about that. So I was kind of afraid that even if he's noticing that like people in his own alt-right milieu are kind of like glossing over it or not covering it, made me think that like the UK media itself is going to do what ours would do, like with Lena Dunham saying, oh, she was just a kid experimenting, and look at her sister's
song. You know who's the best YouTuber on this topic, just to throw in a little plug, Pat Condell. Is fucking based as fuck on this shit. He's awesome on this particular topic. He might have other views that may be dildo here and there, but generally speaking, he's pretty awesome and like hits you right in the face with it. Like he does not pussyfoot around. So that's pretty good.
So it seems to me that what you're saying is your media has not tried to minimize. I mean, I'm sure there's some element has, but it hasn't worked anyway.
I mean, I would say that. In another context, it would get a lot more coverage.
Right.
But, I mean, the thing is, it's like if they're not covering this, then what are they covering? And then it becomes a case of the deafening silence surrounding it.
Right.
And they end up sort of making themselves irrelevant. Because people will know that they're not covering the real news. And rather than it being an SJW problem, I think it's more of a cultural malaise problem where people just can't find it in themselves to get worked up about anything anymore. Mm-hmm. So rather than it being sort of deliberately swept under the carpet, it's more the press sort of taking advantage of the fact that people aren't particularly liberal, they're just particularly vacuous. And particularly consumer orientated and degenerate,
and not even that, but just averse to conflict and having bad thoughts. You know, no one who wants to walk around thinking about 1,400 raped.
And on top of that, it's like to sort of come to the defense of, I suppose, the common man somewhat here, that it's like you don't know. I mean, because of the media narrative that's been hammered. I mean, like in the U.S., you know, because of the media narrative that's been hammered into our head, you don't do anything because you feel completely, you feel isolated. You're like, what would I ever do? And I need to sort of just carry on. And, you know, I know I think this but like, let's say if we had all of our whole cadre that we have on the internet in a physical location together, do you think we would just sit around? No, we're dispersed throughout the country, a huge country. We're all over the place. But it's like, you know, I get why people sort of don't do, because it could be that there's a lot of people that are vacuous, but that's always going to be the case, right? But there's also people that are concerned, but you're sort of like, okay, you know, I need to still keep my job. I need to keep food on the plate, you know, et cetera. So I'm just going to sort of, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm mad. I'm upset. I hate it. But what can I even do? And even if I did something, what would that even do? Because that could then feed into some other narrative or, you know, I mean, first of all, what would it be that could be constructive? You know, it's just, it's a tough thing. So I get it and it sucks. And I don't really know what to do about that, but I sort of get why people are feeling paralyzed, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Mm. Same, yeah. I mean, with the unemployment situation right now, and there's lots of people living hand to mouth with the, you know, paycheck to paycheck type thing. I take that on board. You're right. I mean,
there's another sort of interesting thing is that in terms of talking about how would the SJW crowd sort of dismiss it? Like, how would they brush it off? Because you're saying, you know, it seems totally crass, right? Like, you're literally brushing off the sexual abuse of 1,400, at least, you know, girls, young women and girls, minors. And that's not something that people can brush off, right? And they'll find a way. And I actually have an example in that, you know, the commie website we always make fun of, the WSWS. I was wondering if they would cover it at all, because they tend to cover international news and stuff. I mean, the whole thing is, you know, a small group of Jews in New York that run this little communist website, but they get a wide audience. And so I was like, how are they going to play this? And so their play on it was, oh, well, it's the general social malaise caused by lack of funding for social services. And the fact that it happened to be Pakistani men is because those are the most oppressed layers. And really, honestly, they were actually playing it like if we funded the social services more, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, if we
and
gave
I was
Pakistanis
like, you have
more
to be
money.
Fucking kidding me.
Sometimes I feel like these people are like in a game of Family Feud. And someone says that, and it's like, good answer. And they just hope it shows up on the board and it works.
Right. Like, it's honestly like we play that game too. Like, what narrative can we spin here that will, you know, hurt the most butts, cause the most liberal rustling, whatever. But in this case, it seems a little bit crass. I mean, it's literally like I just don't see how they could do it. I mean, when we do it, it's much more trivial things than that, but. Wow. And you know, in terms of something equivalent in the U.S., I mean, I don't know there's any one incident that would be equivalent, but sort of the daily grind. And the reason it doesn't really get covered is because it's black on black crime, but the daily grind of black crime and the continual refusal to talk about it, to put it on the mainstream news. And we all know, like, whether it's conspiracy or not, but like, you know, white on black crime or white on white crime. Is like a man bites dog. So it actually is news. Like George Zimmerman shooting Trayvon was news because it was unusual. Darren Wilson shooting Michael Brown was news because it was unusual. But like, you know, how many blacks have killed each other? How many blacks have been shot by other blacks since Michael Brown got shot? I mean, seriously, I mean, people point this out a lot, but I have no idea. Thousands, probably.
Yeah, go right on stuffblackpeopledontlike.com or whatever it is, and he'll probably be able to find out quickly.
If you're white, though, and you shoot a black, then it's an unholy ritual. It's blasphemous to the dildo, and it
even
has to be called out.
Defense.
I mean, if you're black, you can kill as many blacks as you want. No one cares.
Yeah, because it doesn't. It's not any. I mean, and even that
culture.
Is really whitey's fault because of the structural oppression or whatever. Yeah,
it's part of
it.
It's
yeah.
part of their culture. Yeah. We just don't no. understand.
The 10 billion reasons I could pull out my fucking butthole. You know, if it tugs at some fucking shitty heartstrings, it works. I mean, we could dismantle all their arguments. That won't fucking matter.
Even if it just pushes the argument down the road for another day, it works. You know, even if it just dispels it for the time being, it fucking works.
All right.
Anyway.
Cool. So,
well, what seems to be happening now with the Rotherham thing is they're turning it into a Britain First versus SJW pitch street battle, and that seems to be detracting from the real narrative. You're aware of who Britain First are, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of them. Uh-huh, so I don't need to go into that too much.
We can predict who would win that battle, but if it came down to actual fisticuffs.
Yeah, those guys look like they can handle themselves, like no problem. But from what I've seen, it just seems to be, oh, Britain First are having a protest in Rotherham today, and then your usual sort of 21st century pond life turn up to protest against them. And then that becomes the prevailing narrative as opposed to what has actually happened. So.
Sure. And even I confess I get sucked into that too, because it is, you know, dramatic, and it's like gives you a side to root for. And I'm like, I'd love to see Britain First like beat the skulls out of these fucking commie scum, you know, like, and I honestly would. Love that.
No, there was an article going around with like the Britain First folks that were all, it's like a crowd of them that were like transgender and trans, or like transsexual, and that was interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, whatever you say about transsexuals,
Britain First, gender second.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you're going to say about any kind of weird sort of weird twisted faggot that you're going to say, they're going to want to go. Ultimately, they're not going to want to go for Islam. I mean, they might do it in the short term for social signaling purposes, for whatever, you know, rent seeking purposes, whatever they're going to do. In the long run, you're going to want to go with the West, because ultimately the West is going to let you do your thing in private if you just do it in private. The Muslims will fucking kill you, you know, so just keep that in mind.
Although it's really interesting, when I lived in Egypt, they were all gay as hell.
Yeah, there's like, a lot of stuff like that that's going on from what I've heard. I used to have a Palestinian boss, and he's like, yeah, he used to describe things he would do with olive oil. And I was like, okay. So let's take that no further. The one thing I remembered that I sort of remembered, it was very soon after Rotherham came out. It was this article in The Guardian, and it was specifically framed as an attack on Britain First, who was staging protests in Rotherham. And interestingly enough, the young SJW woman, I'm sure she's probably well known in Britain. She was like this young, very liberal columnist for The Guardian. Can't remember her name. Doesn't really matter. And she was like, so I came by the Rotherham courthouse or the municipal building there, the government building in the town. And so Britain First is all outside. And, you know, I mentioned in an article I wrote a while ago, and she was talking about how like, oh, well, they've like used this now as an excuse to push their agenda instead of like acknowledging that maybe they had a point all along. And whatever, I don't know what Marcus Graham thinks of Britain First, what his opinion is. But I mean, from my perspective, they might be like thuggish or whatever, but it's like I think they have a point. They have a legit grievance. And so it's like she couldn't acknowledge this. It's like, oh, it's like it's just an excuse. They're using the atmosphere to push their agenda. It's like, well, maybe their agenda needs to be pushed a little bit. You know what I mean? And it's like that doesn't ever occur.
And I think actually in the UK, we probably have a more healthy civic debate than the States from what I can see. And in that way, I think the SJWs here are marginalizing themselves because they do actually refuse to discuss the issues. And you can dance around the issue so much, but I mean, this is too big to
ignore. It's funny how when in a world, or say in a region that's as dildoized as it is, when in big media, relevant media outlets, I should say, when you start speaking the right wing language, then people either refuse to have you on, or they'll throw emotional bullshit at you. But it's and everyone outside of the media just tries to avoid it. But it's funny that when you're in person and you're actually bringing up relevant talking points using right-wing language, it's funny how, at least this is in my experience, if you're in a group of, with a group of people and they're having political discussion, you start throwing right-wing friendly lingo out there, then all of a sudden it's like awkward silence, like everything's so uncomfortable and out of the norm, and it's just unbearable. You have to leave. It's too scary.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely created that effect before.
And it's not even like try hard edge shit. It's just like,
yeah, like normal.
It could even be something like, capitalism's actually not bad.
Yeah, I have gotten like, blank stares. Stares from that.
But the thing, it's getting to the stage now where I think now you can actually say that stuff. Because if you're just speaking the truth and the other side has to dance around the issue, oh, by speaking the truth, you're playing into the hands of Britain First. Well, eventually people are going to say, well, hey, maybe I do actually agree with Britain First. And, this is probably why UKIP in the UK are polling 24%. Right. And, Nigel Farage is a pretty cool guy. I mean, imagine Nigel Farage in the States was polling 24%. Yeah. Oh. I mean, that would be really, really cool, wouldn't it?
Yes, yeah, I mean, so, I guess the closest thing we would have, people might get annoyed, but we had like Ron Paul, but he wasn't even hitting on those kind of issues. I mean, he was hitting on some issues that were important, but he wasn't hitting – like Nigel Farage, he's got balls. I'll give it to him. And, I really do sort of wish that we had somebody over here. And there's reasons why it's more – everything here is more toned down, homogenized, very – very fucking milquetoast. Like every all rhetoric is extremely, extremely tepid. I mean, it's a huge country, and the actual people that politically disagree with each other tend to be geographically separated, mm-hmm. and other reasons. We can go into that whole a lot of reasons why, but yeah, Britain definitely has a little bit more active actual engagement going on.
There is a lot that's good about the UK. I mean, there's a lot that's bad. But I'd say in a lot of ways you misdiagnose what's bad. I mean, just I guess we can sort of begin to wrap things up now. I think we've sort of covered most aspects of most things. I'd say in conclusion that London is mainly the way London is because of money and because of a black and grey market economy, mm-hmm. much more so than sort of explicit SJW-ism. And the black market, ironically, plays into the hands of the SJWs. And in this way, sort of London operates very well, but in precisely a way that runs against the grain of the ostensible narrative of it. In terms of the rest of the UK, it's a very mixed picture. Islam is probably a problem in certain places. It's very entrenched. There are sort of Islamic ghettos definitely around. Yorkshire is very bad in particular, and it definitely in parts of London. And it's where they are allowed to culturally nucleate and not intermix in the rest of society, that you end up getting the problems. Also, you're right with sort of the second generation problem. I think Britain is just, because of the SJW narrative, there is literally no British culture for these people to latch onto. Mm-hmm. So when and because their own native culture is diluted from coming here, you get people growing up into a cultural vacuum where they don't know where they belong, they don't know what they're doing, and with feminism, you know, the whole male-female narrative is all messed up, and you will get a bunch of disenfranchised young men who will turn to extremism because nothing else makes sense in broken homes, in broken cultures, in a highly taxed economic environment with not much economic freedom. Of course, this is going to happen. And basically, yeah, it's everything that's wrong is the fault of the SJWs. And yeah,
of course,
that's about it. Of course, that goes without saying. But yeah,
TLDR, it's all the SJW's fault.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marquise Graham. Did I say it right? Did I fuck it up?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, thank you, Marquise Graham, for giving us your on-location report of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, it's first TRS International, that's right. Whatever the hell we want
to
call it.
Thank you for staying up late to do this for us. I hope you don't have to go to work tomorrow.
You're welcome. No, I don't. I'm starting a new job next week.
So. Ah, there you go.
I'm glad that we got a chance for you to defend your homeland from our
from our onslaught. Barbs. That's right.
I appreciate it. No, but I do like you guys because when it actually comes to very strong cutting criticism of the UK, the only place I get it elsewhere is Private Eye. I'll recommend to your listeners, there's a weekly magazine from the UK called Private Eye that's very, very good. And you guys are definitely up there. You tell it how it is. You tell it how you see it. And you're very smart as well. You're a bunch of very smart guys, and I really enjoy listening to you.
You're just the kind of guy who likes to be called a cuck and a faggot. I don't know what that says about you, but...
Okay, yeah, appreciate it. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you,
dude. All right, cool, man.
Okay, right, off to bed with me. All right, catch you later.
All right, man, take it easy.
Sleep well.
All right, so here is Kimmy Goebbels with the Shitlord Report.
Sup, cucks? I'm Kimmy Goebbels, and it's time for the Shitlord Report. Dueling nude pop culture cunts was the theme for this week, dudes. We had Kim Kardashian and her giant glazed donut photoshopped ass, Keira Knightley's unphotoshopped, unimpressive boy curves, and even Chelsea Handler's lip-wristed parody of what we saw. I'm not sure what part of being a rich 29-year-old actress with a rack less impressive than Bulbasaur's is supposed to be empowering, but that didn't stop Keira Knightley from being hashtag so brave and taking a stand against photoshopping and body shaming. I think women's bodies are a battleground and photography is partly to blame. It's actually a difficult question. How much flesh are you meant to bear, she said. We're saying that we should be sexually liberated, but then again, not that sexually liberated. It's confusing. I know, sister. It's almost like it's complete bullshit. Sexually liberated? The only way to be liberated from sex is to be as undesirable and unattractive as possible. You could do that if you wanted to, but I doubt Hollywood would be calling you that often with the big money offers demanding you, quote, do things male actors are never asked to do, specifically gratuitous sex and violence. Just appreciate that even though you look like a kindergartner with your shirt off, you still have a pretty face, and your marketing department has enough Photoshop skills to be sure pedophiles aren't the only ones fapping to your image. Most women who are feminists have to be, because they're so ugly men only fap to the idea of them being dead, if they notice them at all. Kim Kardashian also showed off her stuff this week with a heavily photoshopped and unappealingly greased up bare-ass photo that was supposed to somehow break the internet or something. The only thing broken as a result of this is my tolerance for coal-burning slobs whoring themselves where I can see it. I mean, I get it. America has a huge underclass of lumpen poles, POCs, and assorted losers who need to be distracted by something shiny, and not all of them like sports. But for fuck's sakes, Kardashian's glossy ass garners attention so much further up the social ladder, it has even penetrated the ivory tower of the TRS offices and forced us to comment. Seriously, this is why we can't have nice things. No one who doesn't pay for their groceries with an EBT card should even notice that this slut exists. But here we are, the consumerist idiocracy with no soul, willingly handing riches and attention to a person with no other assets or skills than her genetics and a tenacious drive to self-promote her way to success. It's easy to sit here and condemn her for being an empty vessel marketing herself and her sexuality, but fuck you, America, you're the one eating it up. I can't even sit here and laugh at Jezebel's desperate scribblings trying to distance themselves and feminism from Kardashian's latest stunt because my ovens are preheated too high, burning with rage for my fellow countrymen. This is the future you've chosen. For the rightstuff.biz, I'm Kimmy Goebbels, and this has been the Shitlord Report.
Yay. It's like she was on topic doing the British accents. Like, we knew this was going to happen today. It's pretty good.
I think most women that do a British accent are on top. So that was probably pretty bad, actually. I tried.
Do we have any donations? I know we've got some feedback.
Yeah, we got some donations. I got a donation for $20 from Pierce. That was great. Thanks, Pierce.
Hope you're doing well.
And somebody, I don't know who, sent me 0.001488 Bitcoin. You can actually trade in Bitcoin at that small, and that's I looked it up. The exchange rate is about 58 cents.
Oh, he says in the feedback that it was 64 cents. He's actually trying to test if you had your a better storage
That's the same guy. Because
I guess so. Because it says he donated you 64 cents, but I don't know. I don't think we need to go into talking.
Okay, so I guess the exchange rate changed, but yeah, I got it. See, okay,
that was from Jay.
It's the guy, Jay, again. I thought he was saying he had sent 0.64 Bitcoin. And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. That's like $200. But the thing is, then I was like, did you send it to the other address? Because send it to the other address. There's a new address up. And yes, I know I got to fix that button, but, you know, I'm lazy.
Yeah, right.
I look at fucking code 40 hours a week. More than that. Anyway, whatever. We can edit that out.
That's fine. So we got some other, some interesting feedback. First one comes from, is that console? I don't know what that says.
I would say console.
Dear TRS, I noticed the following today when I was going to show my niece your parody of Let It Go, Shut It Down. That it wasn't there. Did they suspend the account? Yes, they suspended. That was Aryan Troll was the account on
YouTube.
Yeah,
to be fair, that's actually not directly associated with us.
No, that's Meraki's thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's his own. That's Meraki's own. That's his own thing he's got going on.
Yeah. He's had it going on for longer than we've been around. He does have a new channel that he's uploading those videos back to.
Is it Tyrant Fascister?
Tyrant Fascister is the new account.
All those old videos, all the little clips of Merchant Minutes are all on there, I believe, and all his songs and things.
Well, the content isn't all back up. I mean, he had years of content, so it's going to take a little while to upload all that stuff. And so, yeah. But the good news is that he has all of it. Like, he didn't count on, you know, YouTube as being his archiving service, which you can never count on. So,
that's right.
So he's got all of the material. So one way or the other, if it comes down to it, we'll even put it up on our site if YouTube can't handle the edges.
This is why we host our own stuff, and it's
right.
Not,
this
it's,
is why.
This is why it's stuff. Not on iTunes. It's not on, you know, various other podcast services, just because of, you know, people report fag. It's just a reality, and the people mm-hmm. that you report fag to are not exactly on our side. So There's, you know, yep. It is what it is.
So in the text of the post for this, we'll put the link to the Tyrant Fascist channel. And I think he's going recent to old. So like the stuff that's up there is new, is the new stuff. So that song should be up there. So
right. Okay.
So yeah, there's that. So yeah, I was going to respond to that Jay guy, but I guess we already did that. So yeah, I did get that Bitcoin. So if some, if people want to send to that Bitcoin address, then go ahead. I still don't know what the hell we're ever going to do with the Bitcoins, but you know, whatever.
Got to catch them all.
Yeah.
Just collect them. Then we got Alexander writes, hey guys, I'm as whitewashed as they come. I'm a third generation Hispanic dude who can't understand Spanish, let alone speak it. There's a lot of civilized minorities out there who hate degeneracy and are fed up with the leftist bullshit. What I'm asking is, when the Ubermensch inevitably rise up and seize power for the superior white race, will there be any room for people like me, or will I be cast into the slums of Detroit along with the barbarians? Yes, Alexander, well, you will be walled in with everyone else and executed. No.
I don't know what impression this guy has, but I mean, this isn't like the Stormfront podcast, and we're not fucking autists with this shit.
I get why... You know, I get why somebody would feel like that.
Here would be my answer. I mean, I don't have any. I would just, if you don't want to be a part of that, then do well financially, and you won't be a part of that. Work hard. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, particularly, I think with Hispanics, it's like, I mean, we have the category in the United States. I mean, I hate to even say this, like. To make this strict dichotomy of like there's a lot of white people that are Spanish, right? And
right.
There's definitely different classes, and you know, I don't have anything against Spanish. Some of my best friends are Cuban, you know. I mean, if you don't fit into that culture, you're probably basically, for all intents and purposes, white. I mean, I don't think that. You know, we're not looking to sort of, it's not like we're going to be like massacring minorities or something. And it's not out of any sort of malevolence. It's that we want to preserve our own culture.
Yeah.
And we're the only people that aren't allowed to, you know, so-called by the popular narrative. We're the people that are supposed to give everything up to accommodate those that aren't like us. I mean, funny, we actually, I'll just go off on a little thing. We talked about Britain with the Grand Marquis, and you know, there's an article I was reading on Britain by, I shared it, I think, in our Facebook group. It was this woman who, she's Muslim, she's British, and she's bitching about how she can't make any white friends in Britain. But it's like, then in the text of her own article, she admits that she's more comfortable around her own sisters. And by sisters, she means other Muslim women. And she's more comfortable around them because they don't judge her for wearing her hijab. They don't care if she talks about Muslim prayer. They don't judge her if she talks about arranged marriage. And they don't pressure her to go out drinking. Jeez. And that's all of the things that white Britons do. Because that's their fucking culture. Doesn't have arranged marriage. Doesn't have hijab. Doesn't have fucking, you know, a prohibition on alcohol, doesn't talk about Islamic prayer. And so, oh, I don't have any white friends, but at the same time, I feel more comfortable around people like me. So all our thing is people should be around people they're comfortable.
Yeah.
And there's not this, yeah, I know, it's like a real fucking head scratcher there. And yet she still blames white people for this not fitting in. Like, it's everybody's job to drop everything to make her comfortable. Well, you have a place where you're comfortable. Yeah.
Say that again.
It's really because she can. Like, it's,
yeah.
White people are just everyone's fucking, either you're fucking boogeyman or you're cop out. You know.
Yeah.
If you're stressed about anything in life, it doesn't even have to be fucking anything. Well, we're in a period of time now where we're starting to talk about fucking microaggressions here. Like we're, you know what I mean? Yeah. If you're, and that shit gets traction. I mean, it gets. It's like universities funding like big shitty projects regarding you know, microaggression awareness and what is a microaggression? You said something that was kind of silly. Oops a daisy.
Yeah, and like this woman, of course, is received very well in the, you know, the papers and all that crap. So basically, to get back on point to our friend, I wouldn't worry about it. Like, you know, there's plenty of crossover with white and Spanish culture. I mean, what I'm primarily worried about is a bunch of third world mestizos coming in and muddying up everything and bringing the intellectual, cultural, and economic level down.
Yes.
Which they do in the areas that they come into. And I just don't I don't want that to happen to the whole country. I mean, it's already happened to several regions of it, and sort of we're getting like sort of internally balkanized in these little, you know, white people are here, and then this yeah. ghetto population of MUDs is here, etc.
Well, he says right in his little feedback that he doesn't understand Spanish, let alone speak it. I mean, that's your answer right there. You're basically, what you're telling me is you're assimilated,
right?
So
yeah, you're like,
that's not what we're worried about.
Culture already. I'm gonna guess you don't. Your physical appearance is not particularly...
Yeah, he probably looks like those drawings from those comics yeah. that the liberals want.
I mean, if anything,
want.
You can mac it to white chicks pretty easily. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that you, you know... So, yeah, I really wouldn't worry about
we
it.
We want dude. You around to own restaurants. Make us tacos. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. So, well, moving on, I guess... Is that all the feedback worth reading? I believe so. Do we have any more donations?
There's some long articles. I mean, they're long. We got to go over them. Yeah. We'll discuss them.
Yes.
Lynn Blythe, you know, we got to get back in touch. I'll get back. You know, I've been kind of had a shitty week, whatever. It's not really an excuse, but, you know, this isn't our full-time thing. We do have jobs. We do have businesses, etc. So, yeah, I got to get back in touch with you, Lynn Blythe. We'll chit-chat maybe over email. And it's a little bit of a slow week because, you know, we had a big show last week. We had shit going on this week. Bulbasaur has to work. So, it's a little bit of a slow week, but we'll be back with a huge show up for you next week.
Yeah, we were kind of expecting the Ferguson happening. And
yeah, we were a little bit let down by that not happening. So I'm expecting that it will happen sometime this week, and then we'll have just a huge.
It's gonna be. We'll
bust out the Donkey Kong music and see where it goes.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll.
I mean, you know, I'm gonna save it all. I'm just gonna save it.
Just save it.
Yeah, just leave it. Just leave
let's
it.
Save it.
It's really not
save the ass pain for next week. So I guess if you guys want, we can go back to what we talked about last week a little bit.
Oh yeah, you wanted to say some things.
Yeah, so. Last week was such a monster. It was so long, and we covered so. Well, actually, it was so long. It doesn't feel like we covered. Well, anyway, we got into Moldbug a little bit, and I really just wanted a white knight for him a little bit. It seemed like it seems like the in thing to do on the alt-right is to just. It's to just break that guy down and bust him down for a million whatever reasons. And I think that's kind of unfortunate. It's like, I think, Ghoul, I think you even said that, you know, I've read this shit before. I've read it in this book or that book.
That was me.
Oh, that was you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have a more reserved opinion. I didn't spend that much time reading this stuff. I mean, I get the gist because this stuff's repeated a lot by a lot of people all the time.
Yeah.
So I get the general understanding.
Yeah.
And I've tried to look at it, and what I got out of it was he says a lot of things that could be summarized in a sentence and stretches them out to five pages. And
that's what I was going to say. It's like I'm sorry.
And then I'd say he states a lot of obvious things, but then just gives you know, different names to him, Indian shit. I don't know.
He set out to do that on purpose. He had this like verbose fucking like writing style to just throw it out there in as grandiose a way as possible, and it works on some people. It's kind of a gimmick, and he was kind of
I mean, I'll say that sometimes taking something that everyone already understands and giving it a new word can actually do a lot in the right situation. But specifically, I just get annoyed when people talk about him like he's some brilliant guy bringing something new, and really he's just giving his own interesting little reflection of how he is seeing it.
So he's basically signaling, I'm really smart, look at my vocabulary. Look at how I can write.
Maybe that's part of it.
Well, it's a little bit, but then it seems to me like the counter signaling is, oh, I'm not impressed by this.
I'm sure that's
and I find it kind of
one of the main reasons why
I find it pretty unfortunate that that's kind of what's gone on. I know, like, over at like the Vox Day blog, him and his commenters all made the same kind of like statements, and it's obvious signaling that they're too smart to be mystified by his, you know, whatever you want to call it. And I think it's sad because, like, for me, like, it was a pretty good antidote when I read the like the 14-part open letter to progressives or whatever it was. Like, I was still ANCAP at the time, pretty much, and that kind of like smashed everything that I thought about ANCAP, because here we have, you know, oh, force does things, and it took, like, when I originally read Hoppe, when I originally read Democracy, the God That Failed, and when he opens up that book talking about comparing monarchy to democracy and the time preference aspect of a ruler who owns and sees a country as his property, blah blah blah. At first it was like, that was for me when I read that, I was like, okay, thought experiment. That's a cool thought experiment. But then, like, when Moldvog came around, it was like, no, literally, we should look into that. I was like, huh. I think that it was like his writing was a pretty good antidote to ANCAP thinking, to ghetto ethics type stuff, like as a Doolittle.
Here's what I think is good, generally speaking, of alt-right, big alt-right names, people that put out their interpretations of things and stuff, is a lot of it's seems to be directed toward really the political Brahmin, and that can consist of ANCAPs, that can consist of plenty of things.
Sure.
But I feel I feel a lot of it's a really good stepping stone for the more Brahmin types to into right. But the thing that annoys me is, and it's not like everyone's who's involved in this kind of reading is necessarily guilty of this or anything, but when people stop at these people in a way where they believe that this is a brand new frontier of thinking, and we're really onto something, we're ahead of something, when really I think it's more of a taking a lot of older ways of thinking, really, which someone could get probably a much better understanding of this kind of thinking reading the right kind of philosophy books, some of which are old, some of which not so old. But I mean, there's if you're really into a lot of these alt-right blogs and stuff, there's a more thought-provoking stuff that if you like Moldbug, there's a lot of other stuff you should be reading.
Sure.
I mean, he would say that himself, though. I don't think he would deny that. And, right. And I think that the good thing I think about Moldbug, and I think I was maybe a little bit hard on him, or I don't think it was hard on him. I was just sort of giving
I don't think you really were. I'm thinking of what I've seen elsewhere around the alt-right.
The thing I think was great about Moldbug is that he essentially went into a crowd of people that I think needed to hear his shit and told it to them. And that, by that I mean, like, really, I'm talking about basically probably the milieu that I came out of, which is sort of like upper middle class white boy ANCAPs that think they're fucking smart as shit.
Yeah.
Because they've got the NAP and they can beat any liberal in a lot. They can get any liberal to argue himself into a contradiction, and they're going to wave that dick around in every fucking chat room or whatever and be, you know, that guy when, you know, obviously, you know, beating up retarded liberals in shitty arguments is if you can't do that, then, you know, whatever. And as much as, don't get me wrong, I love it. It's one of my hobbies. But, you know, it's not like a super fucking power. And I think whether you agree with all of his doctrines or not, whether you agree with his use of language, he laid down some fundamental principles to sort of wake you back up out of that ANCAP spell. And that, in my opinion, is who he was directed at. He was come out of that milieu. He could speak their language. He could get across to them. And that's not an inconsequential group of people. It's a group of people who tend to be really far up their own asshole, but if pulled out can become,
you can think again.
Yeah. Can think again, can be consequential, can be, you know, not just,
you'll stop shouting that the cops are the enemy.
Right, it's not going up, not going up to New Hampshire and smoking weed in a public park and thinking that this is going to
wearing matter. Wearing your hat into the courtroom and getting thrown into jail for 40 days over it.
Right, exactly. So, no, there's some of those people that are just relentlessly dildo that have no, I don't even want to talk to them. I don't want to deal with them.
Right.
Even when I was an ANCAP, I thought they were fucking shitty because they didn't actually have lives. But, you know, he speaks the language that that group needs to hear. And it's a small in numbers, but it's still relatively, even compared to us, compared to the alt-right, it's a large in number group. And even though small in number, it's a high in social capital group.
Right.
So they would have much greater impact outside of,
right.
But outside of their numbers because of their status as generally upper middle class, upper class white men with disposable income.
Right.
I mean, that alone is important.
To elaborate more on what I said before, and in case I didn't make it clear enough, I think it's good because like stuff like mold bug and I would say generally speaking useful alt-right media outlets are really good at it's good at throwing people back in reality.
Yeah.
But there's an underlying connection, not a direct connection, but a connection between mold bug types and like escapist irrelevant bullshit. And I feel like it's really easy for people to, I don't know, they cannot into reality. So then they go taking, you know, the Mad Monarchist really seriously or something. And, you know, rather than actually politically assimilating into reality.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you just real quick, one thing I'll tell you isn't going to happen. You know, I mean, we talk about political reality a lot, and I know that that's sort of become a contentious issue because it's like, what is political reality? Can I have ideas outside the mainstream? Do I have to just be a Republican or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, you don't, but I will tell you some things that aren't going to happen. A Hitler-style fascism is not really going to be happening.
Hitler isn't coming. King George is not coming back.
Yeah, that's not happening. Really, no sort of experiments with socialism, I don't think, are really on the plate. A Catholic-style monarchy or Greek Orthodox monarchy, highly unlikely. Yeah, I mean, I hate to crush your dreams, or I don't know, but it's like, let's talk about a reasonable kind of society that we can have now, even though, yes, what I think is, you know, like I said, sort of an ordered liberty in a majority white nation.
Yeah.
That seems like completely out of reach almost in the given atmosphere. But I think that this is a vision that could work in a modern society. I'm not trying to go back to Hitlerite socialism or, you know, some kind of, you know, we're going to reform the Knights Templar or something like that. You know what I mean?
Let me just throw this out there. When you go back into political reality, I'm not even telling you what to do or what you should do or what the right course of action is or what's going to get us everything we need, but you should at least go back into reality with the knowledge that you have and think, how can I apply my knowledge now?
Right. And what kind of like has me concerned about all the criticism of him is, now if you're this person who needs a snapback to political reality from your ANCAPistan aspirations or whatever it is you have, like now when if you start to read that and you're feeling doubts about it because it's attacking these principles of yours that you're holding so dear, there is more than enough validation out there for you to find in those doubts, because there's so much out there of, oh, he's a blowhard, oh, it's bullshit, oh, it's this and that. So now that it may be about to snap you back into reality, but then you read some other asshole who's just trying to signal and throwing him under the bus, and now that person is not, may not snap back into reality, is what concerns me a little bit. I don't know how many of these people.
I see what you're saying.
So that's why I wanted a white knight for him, not because oh, I read it and I liked it back then. I thought it was a good antidote.
Oh yeah, like not the reaction where it's like, he's stupid, I'm much smarter, and then walking away.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, he's definitely not stupid. I mean, that's one thing he isn't.
Yeah.
So.
I think he even said, if I recall, when he was describing his little formalism idea, he actually touched upon, you know, what actual, you know, LARPing versus, well, I hate to use that term because I don't like marginalizing the people that, anyway, when he talked about like what's practicality, it's like, okay, so at one point, like, we're not going to restore the Stuarts, but maybe at some point we'll be able to limit suffrage to 35-year-old landowning males or something
right.
more reasonable, or somebody who makes this amount, this income level before you can get a vote, stuff like that. So that stuff is in there, but a lot of it is, I don't know, thought experiment and fancy words. I like fancy words.
Yeah, and that's cool too. If people,
I just
like
don't use them, man.
Words, it's fine.
It's my choice. I don't use them. I don't know them all. I just, you know, I have the recording gear in the microphone.
Yeah,
that's
well,
why
I mean, we know that introducing a new vocabulary to current situations is effective, and we do it on TRS.
Yeah, we have our own little thing that we developed.
And chip controls, actually, yeah, baby.
It actually does. It does a lot of good.
It creates an in-group identity. Mm-hmm. It creates some certain shared rituals and practices that we do together. That, I mean, it sounds gay, right? But it's true. Like, we know, like, we signal to each other with these words. It means we're a part of this in crowd, and that's something that I think a lot of people really want to have. And I think that's why you know people like to be part of an in group. And
I also think
cool.
though, it as you know, the sociology aside, I one thing that makes it really good is, it allows people to better address established left narratives that the Gen X and baby boomer conservatives simply cannot address because they are still kind of stuck in dildo land a little bit, and they don't want to, you know, they can't properly challenge certain narratives. And I do think that the created lingo does that job very effectively.
Yeah, I mean, maybe on another show we can go into sort of some of the tactics of language that SJWs use, and how one thing I think Neo Reaction and Moldbug are great for, and people that followed in after him are great for, sort of breaking down in analytic language what SJWs are doing with language and why it confounds you, you know, and that's really valuable stuff in my opinion.
Yes, it is.
Speaking of Moldbug, I mean, one of the criticisms I guess he receives is that he might be of a certain persuasion.
Oh yes, he might be of a certain, yes, Moldbug. That's one of the problems. He's and last we left in the harrowing tale of Shlomo and Merakiu.
Merakiu had sold out.
I know,
he?
He's waiting.
What's
for,
going on with
he's
that?
Waiting for his slice of Gaza. I don't know, but
and you know, and just goes to show him he sold out to Shlomo,
and then
his channel gets taken down.
Still got
shut it down. Yeah. Shut it
you
down.
Think, you think that they're going to be honest with you? But this should be a grave lesson.
I think I'm going to assume that he got double Jude, and I'm assuming that his piece of the Gaza Strip was. It's filthy.
Well, let's find out. Without further ado, I ain't do nothing wrong. Trying to get my life together. Without further ado, here's the Merchant Minute.
Previously on the Daily Showa.
You'll get shut down.
You actually fucking did it. I thought we had a deal, Shlomo. I put out propaganda for the state of Israel and the Jewish people, and I get to keep my media empire. But you went and you terminated my YouTube account. Probably because you knew how I'd react when I found out that this piece of the Gaza Strip you were going to give me is just a commemorative rock. Like, literally, this piece of the Gaza Strip is something that can fit in my fucking hand. And they sell these all over Israel in, like, 50 different locations that are claimed to be the tomb of Christ by, you know, the hand-wringing Shlomos. So, no thanks. You can have back your contract and your piece of the Gaza Strip. There isn't even any oil on that rock. There's just a blood stain that makes it look like it was used to stone a prostitute or a disobedient child. Wait a minute. It's a prostitute. I've been Jewed a lot in my life, like the time McDonald's forgot my fries, but this takes the cake. I've learned a valuable lesson here, and you all should learn from my mistake. Never make a deal with a Jew. Oh, he also sent an individually numbered certificate of authenticity with the rock. Mine is number 1488. Hey, Shlomo, shove it up your ass. This is the Merchant Minute. Either the yellow merchants have tricked our naive African president into making a climate deal, much like Shlomo tricked me, or President Obama is using some non-binding chit-chat with the Chinese president as a bludgeon against the Republicans, who have used China's environmental track record as an excuse not to destroy our own economy for the sake of the planet. We'd only end up subsidizing the growth of countries that aren't run by hippies anyway, but now the American left, media outlets with names like Bloomberg, think the Chinese saying they'll cut emissions sometime in the future means we no longer have an excuse not to put the AA batteries in and fire up the carbon tax dildo, even though the yellow merchants have made the same promises before and backed out of them. And the Jews attempted to break the internet by taking pictures of Kim Kardashian and photoshopping away her horrific ass stretch marks and giving her the waist of a Barbie doll. Nice try, Jews, but I'm still able to download your jungle music and Marxist movies without paying for them.
Ooh.
You didn't break shit. And now over to Morocco for your local weather. Thanks, Morocco. Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me hard. A Category 5 happening, dubbed Dindupocalypse by the National Happening Center, is barreling down on Missouri and is expected to make landfall sometime in the next week. But who the hell really knows when? The National Guard is on standby, ready to help when this mindless force of nature with no agency starts damaging people or property. Missouri residents are advised to buy a shotgun and stay away from windows to be safe, which is exactly like blaming a rape victim, you shitlord. I don't care if you killed 6 million Jews. Your shirt is sexist and ostracizing. For the right stuff.biz, I'm Rocky, and this has been the Merchant Minute.
How does he just keep delivering? It's so.
Oh, that was great.
That was amazing.
That was a good one.
So. Farewell to the old Meraki channel. Long live the new Meraki channel. All right. Well, thanks for joining us this week. We'll be back again next week. Hopefully, we'll have a nice, long, violent Ferguson happening to report about.
It's just be a huge show.
Yeah. It's going to be just, you know, you'll love it.
If you live in the general perimeter, you should be boarding up your house right now.
Yeah, you should, like,
spray some Nog repellent.
Yeah. I don't know.
What you do is just play classical music outside of your house,
or like
they won't come anywhere near it.
But just play like Van Halen Eruption over and over again, just the guitar solo, the electric guitar in that kind of being wielded that way just kind of repels them. They don't like it very much.
Hide all your money in your books.
Wait, why would you hide the book? Oh, in the books. They said and your books. It's like, what would you hide your books for? All right, so we'll be back then. Thanks a lot. Let's thank Marquis Bram for joining us, for staying up super late in the UK and giving us the rundown on his country and how he's not a faggot like all the rest of them over there. Right.
Always give your best.
All right.
Never get discouraged.
Hope you're doing well.
Never be petty. Always remember, others may hate you. Those who hate you don't win, unless you hate them. And then you destroy yourself.
Se escucha un eco de su voz. Adiós, mi general, adiós. Quiero cerrar filas otra vez en ese ejército que invicto comandó y que mil glorias a la patria le entregó. Adiós, mi general, adiós, la página que hoy día se cerró se abre ya la historia como ráfagas de sol, justo en el umbral donde se encuentran los valientes, los que se atreven, los que jamás se han de olvidar. We'll be right back. Adiós, mi general, adiós. El grito que en Chorrillos se escuchó. ¡Viva Baquedano vencedor! Y que del pecho del soldado se escapó. Soy un ciudadano que del flor de su grandeza y sencillez hoy vino a despedirlo Don Manuel. Adiós, mi general, adiós, la página que hoy día se cerró se abre ya la historia. Ráfagas de sol, justo en el umbral donde se encuentran.